You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Molly Haskell is one of our most respected film critics, and as an avowed feminist, she's always thought of herself as being open-minded. And yet, when her brother, who was approaching 60, revealed his decision to undergo gender reassignment surgery, she couldn't help being shocked. In her new book, My Brother, My Sister, Ms. Haskell tells the story of this transformation, a seven-year-long journey from the first surgery and name change to the social acceptance of her siblings' new identity. My Brother, My Sister is published by Viking, and I'm very pleased it has brought Molly Haskell back to our show. Hi.
Hi, it's great to be here.
What was your reaction when your brother Chevy told you that he had decided to become a woman?
Well, I was completely flabbergasted, and I just went on being flabbergasted because there was nothing in his past that I could think of that suggested that anything like this was going on.
He never said anything to you when he was a kid?
Never said anything. He had these two great marriages. He had just broken up with his second wife at this point. Marriages that were great in every sense of the word, had been a responsible husband and father, and now this. It was just a total shock.
And what did he tell you? Did he tell you that he had always felt like a woman trapped
in
a man's
body? Well, he
said
as long as he could remember, and it sort of came out that it was about puberty, I think, or maybe a little before that. And we were living in the country, and his room was down the hall. And at that time, he started trying on some of my clothes. I didn't know this. I don't know which one, the girly ones, I suppose. But he didn't know. He had no idea what it was because there wasn't a word for it. There was no way to conceptualize it. He just felt different. Maybe he was gay, but he didn't really feel gay. So this went on and on. And then one of my first questions was, why didn't you do something about it earlier? Well, when he was married in the 70s, that was when Renee Richards came out. And then he sort of put it all together. And he was going to. He left that marriage, and he looked into it, but there was no Internet. There was no information. He lived in this very conservative place, and he thought, I just can't go through with it.
Well, Bradley Manning, who has decided to be called Chelsea, is actually an exceptional situation because he was gay. In your brother's case, your brother's much more typical of people who go through this this transition. They usually live heterosexual lives,
well,
and often get married.
They do. I mean, it's tremendous variety, and I think some of them, one of the statistics says that a third will become gay, let's say male to female transsexuals, a third will become gay, a third heterosexual, and a third asexual. So I don't know. You know, nobody knows because there are no conclusive studies of that kind. But yes, she is now, the hardest thing about this whole thing is the pronouns. He was, and she mm-hmm. is now a heterosexual female.
Well, for convenience sake, we'll say he until the operation, then she after the operation.
That's right. That's right. And I'll still make mistakes, but that's what we'll try for.
You say his marriage had broken up. Did it break up
because
over this?
It did, yeah.
They didn't have children. He'd had a child.
Stepchildren. He had a child by his first marriage who died, and he had two stepchildren who he adored by the second marriage.
And were they as surprised as you?
Everybody was just completely taken aback. I mean, it was just, I think he had told when he married, I mean, he is a very sort of upright, forthright, straightforward guy and gal. And he did tell his future wife, the second, when they were getting married, that he'd had this problem, but he thought he could control it, and he thought he could. He thought he could suppress it, and he promised her he would. And this is one of the things that she resented, that he did have to break the promise, but he had to. I mean, this is what soon struck me with all my questions and shock and everything else was how overpowering the urge is, just how irresistible.
Well, a lot of people had to go through therapy to work this out, not just him. What do therapists think today? Because we've changed our attitudes about all of this. Is the reason this becomes such a powerful urge?
It's still one of the most baffling things there is. And the thinking now is, I mean, a lot of they're discovering that through, you know, refined imagery of the brain, that there are a lot of gender differences that are in different parts of the brain, and sexual orientation may be one, perception, all sorts of things. But I thought from what I researched that this was one of these things that happens in utero, maybe too little testosterone at a certain point. But some of the experts are thinking that it may happen, there may be a larger environmental influence. I'm not sure about that. I mean, somebody like Renee Richards was sure that it came because she was, as a he, kept playing the role. Her sister was a tomboy and was the boy of the family, so he, Richard Raskin, became the girl. And that was a tremendous influence on his. So I think there's a lot of variety. I don't think you can quite pinpoint where it starts.
Renee Richards has been a guest on the show, and later I'll talk a bit about the problems that she has faced in later years after the operation. But in the early times, everybody's very hopeful, right?
It's terrifying because you have to... One of the things that bothered me, I mean, on the one hand, as a feminist and somebody who's interested in latitude and sexual roles, I'm all for people, you know, sort of breaching the barriers between male and female behavior. On the other hand, as a feminist, in my generation of feminists, there was a kind of de-emphasis on appearance, on being an object of the male gaze, so to speak. Well, now all of a sudden, appearance was crucial. She had to be the best woman she could be, and she did everything she could. I mean, she was a money saver anyway. She did the facial reconstruction, and then you go for a year.
And you shave the Adam's apple?
They did that. And one of the terrible things about the tracheal shave, as he was going into the surgery.
Pre-op.
The doctor said, by the way, there's a possible side effect. You know how side effects are. And it can lower, because by this time he had been practicing with a higher register voice. It can permanently drop the register of your voice. And this happened. And it's sort of heartbreaking because everything else, the hormones can't do anything about the voice. That's something, and the surgery for the voice is no good. So that's why she's not on the radio.
On the other hand, it didn't hurt Lauren Bacall.
Howard Hawks told her
to keep her voice on the lower range.
She should have the smoky, whiskey-soaked voice, yeah.
So Chevy had to choose a name as a woman. And I'm always curious about how it's often a name that's the female version of the male name.
It is, very often. In this case, where it came from, I still don't know, but she chose the name Ellen and chose it early on so that it became part of her whole fantasy of who she was. And then when she married and her wife's name was Eleanor, Eleanor always resented this, but Ellen tried to explain, this is who I am. And this is what's hard to understand, how irreversible something like this is, the whole fantasy self that's more real than the exterior one.
Where was she living at the time?
In Richmond.
I wouldn't imagine Richmond
is very
is the most welcoming community for this.
They don't even have gays or feminists, so transgender is not something on their cultural map, I'm afraid.
Well, we would assume that New York would be a better environment for transgender people.
Well, I would have thought all San
Francisco. And then there's this article in today's New York Times about that makes it clear that it can be a problem everywhere.
Yeah, the danger of someone. I think this is one of the things. I found that men really have a hard time with this, gay and straight, have a hard time reading about it. And I think partly it's the obvious thing of mutilation. I mean, how can you, the prized male possession. But it's also, suppose I'm attracted to this person, or suppose there's something in me that would like to be female. So it's all sorts of things like that. And I think the woman that was murdered probably sounds like she had flirted with someone in a bar, and then the man found out. It's sort of boys don't cry, that kind of thing. And I think one of the things Ellen said is if ever a man shows interest, she's going to make sure, she's going to put it on the table right away. Because I think it's kind of for a man to be misled, because it is so threatening in some way. How can I be attracted to somebody who's really a man? So I think it's very dangerous.
Of course, this is a person who's no longer a man.
That's right.
So it becomes more complicated.
It is.
Physically is no longer a man.
Physically is no longer a man. Mentally is no longer a man. And yet there's still some male characteristics. I mean, the height possibly, or the hands, or the voice. And I don't think we can quite get the combine. It's one of the reasons I talk about the pronouns, how I'm always getting mixed up. And I think part of it's my problem because to me, he was a he for 59 years, and that person is in me, too. So that I sort of go back and forth between he and she. So in some sense, in my mind, both sexes are there.
But were you able to make that transition, or did it take a long time? Because you'd known Chevy as Chevy for so long, and now suddenly you had a sister named Ellen.
Well, it's sort of ongoing, and the amazing thing is time. I think time is a real character in the book. I mean, 6 years, not only were there more of these incidents culturally, it was just becoming a more familiar idea. And I was making the mistake less. I mean, sometimes on the phone, just because, you know, it's like speaking a foreign language, you get tired. He gets tired of trying to keep his voice pitched. So when we're on the phone, he'll lower it, and I'll sort of fantasize him still as Jibby. But I'm really, I mean, first of all, she's great. I mean, she is so happy in herself. She looks great. She still knows about computers and financial matters, which, so she really hasn't changed that much.
So she still can get work. So,
well, she had work already. She was a financial advisor, and she could do that from home. So she didn't have the problem of running into a workplace where people, the prejudice of that. So that was fine. And she lives in a place not in Richmond, but out in the mountains, in this sort of ski condo near Charlottesville, where she's made friends who are very cosmopolitan and who adore her.
Although you would have assumed that she would have chosen to move to New York or California, San Francisco or Los Angeles.
Well, I would have when she told me she was going to live there.
Even Atlanta.
Any of these places that are sort of outposts of progressivism or where you can get lost. But I don't think that's what she wanted. She didn't want to necessarily be with other. This is another interesting thing about transsexuals. They don't necessarily want to identify politically as transsexuals because they're just trying to lose themselves as women. And I think she wanted a sort of normal environment where she could be a normal woman.
My guest is Molly Haskell, whose previous books have been mostly about film. And now she's written a book called My Brother, My Sister for Viking, which is a memoir. Your first memoir?
No, I seem to alternate because I did one. I think I was on here for that, too. Love and Other Infectious Diseases about Andrew's illness back in
you
the
were
80s.
Married to Remember Andrew that? Saris, yeah. Who suddenly came down with a terrible illness.
Yeah, right.
Changed his life.
Yeah.
Did the people who were closest to her also need counseling for the transformation?
Well, Eleanor had therapy, mostly to vent. And now I think the first wife had grown accustomed to the idea. She was remarried, and incidentally, they're both best friends. The two women are both best friends with Ellen now. We're hoping it's going to stay that way after the book, but anyway, up until the book, they were.
Well, Ellen kind of discouraged you from writing the book initially.
Oh, that was the second. After she told me this, she said, "You've got to promise not to write about this," and of course, I would have promised anything at that point. But then I kept taking notes, and when he became a she, she was meeting all these transsexuals who were having terrible problems with their families and also didn't know how to dress, didn't know what to do with themselves. And she really wanted to help them, and that was why she not only accepted the idea but cooperated. Her words are in it.
Well, one of the problems that Renee Richards had was that the hormones eventually started having side effects, and she did not look like a happy person physically. Is this something that Ellen was aware of?
This was in the 70s, so that it's
so much more operation
so much more sophisticated then. And she didn't. It's interesting. She went to the sort of grandfather of transsexualism, Harry Benjamin, and he felt she was not. He established these codes whereby the transsexual presents as a woman for a year before having the surgery, just to make sure that she can do it, that her expectations. That she's seen by several therapists. Benjamin didn't think Richard Raskin would be a good candidate. He was so successful and so attractive, all of this. So I think there were a lot of disappointments. One of the things she says is she had a few attractive males interested, but it didn't last for long, and of course it doesn't. I mean, here she was in her 60s. Her son, she had a lot of trouble with her son, so she had a lot of disappointments, but she never actually regretted having done it. She felt she couldn't have done otherwise.
Well, you suggest that the process of watching someone go through a sex change can be compared to a mourning process. In what way?
Well, you're losing a brother. I mean, I was losing a brother. I mean, I felt it would be more of a loss than it's turned out to be. But, you know, there's something atavistic, you know, that even though he's your younger brother, he was the one I leaned on. I leaned on his, and he's so reliable. She still is. So kind of reasonable, and she, I don't know, just in so many ways, she supplemented me in all the ways, my defects. And I mean, it was like a loss. It was like a mourning. And then it turns out not to be.
And you, as someone who finds doing research natural, I suspect that you immediately started looking at every thing that had been written about this, looking at every movie that had been made about it. You even looked into Greek mythology.
Well, of course, other cultures have been, well, not the Greek. The Greeks are as macho as ours, but other cultures have been, I mean, they're sharp. Sometimes the transgender is a shaman and some in Bali and places like that. But unfortunately, this is America. And the other interesting thing, you know, all these sort of promoters of gender fluidity, and which is a great idea. I believe in it. But the transsexual is not fluid. I mean, they really want to be. I mean, even Jan Morris, who talks about equivocating, and she has a wonderful lyrical way of expressing the amorphousness of gender, but yet she absolutely became a woman. So, I mean, I think that it's still an ideal, this kind of, and I do think transsexuals, along with gays and lesbians, are challenging all the sort of the rigid gender stereotypes in a good and healthy way, but it is disturbing. A lot of people don't want to think about it at all, and I can understand that, because it's something so basic about, it's sort of the basic unit of identity, a little boy or a little girl. That's what I am. I'm a boy or a girl, you know.
Well, did, when you realized that your brother felt this way, I'm sure you looked back and thought, well, what were the clues?
Exactly.
And you didn't find any clues.
I really didn't. I'm the only ones, I mean, people look now at the pictures and they say, well, he does have a feminine look, but there are a lot of transsexuals who are very butch and you know, construction workers and all that, so that's not a clue, and I didn't see that anyway. But in later years, there were two things. One is he had gotten incredibly skinny. He was anorexic, and he was always saying it was for his cholesterol, and his doctor was monitoring, but both his wife and I were really concerned about that, and he said when he came to tell me about this, that was because I wanted to get out of my male shape. And the other thing, he was always picking at his fingers till they were almost bloody. They were sort of scarred and red. And that, too, was just trying to get out of that skin, that male skin.
There has been a fair amount of literature written about this. So you mentioned Jan Morris, and Renee Richards has written about it. Wendy, now I've forgotten.
Jennifer Boylan.
And then the musician who did the Bach on the
oh, yeah, I know about him, but I haven't read his. And also the
Wendy Carlos.
And the guy who was the woman now who was teaching at a yeshiva school, I think, Art. And they were going to fire him, and everybody said, no, you can't do that, and protested, and they kept her.
Now, some cultures are perfectly fine accepting of transgender people, but aren't religions generally critical? Doesn't this become a problem on other levels?
It does. It does. I mean, one of the problems with Eleanor is a very strong Baptist, and she said, God made your body the way it is, and you know, that became a real obstacle for both of them. And I think most do. I mean, they feel that you need the separation of the sexes is sort of just the way we define ourselves, yeah.
Now, you mentioned that the medical procedures have become more sophisticated in recent years. Is there still a danger of things going wrong? Because this is, it has been described to me, and I don't think we want to go into great detail.
They made me do that in the book. Somebody made me do it. But I have warnings, so it's like
it's very hard for people to imagine this kind of,
and they don't want to.
This kind of mutilation.
We don't want to think about it, and I can understand that. But the irony is that That's sort of a breeze, the anatomical surgery. It's the facial reconstruction that's really scary, because it's a sort of a matter of chopping into your forehead and rearranging the parts of your face. And there's a doctor, and they have very subtle distinctions between male and female physiognomy, but he studied this, and that's the one that's a scary and the most painful and grueling one.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, Chevy had a biological son who died young.
Yes.
What were his feelings when he learned that his wife was pregnant? I mean, some men actually go through the pregnancy with their
wives. It could have been a clue that he had almost like a nervous breakdown when his wife gave birth. And I, thinking back on it, I said, what was that all about? He said, because I thought I was the one that should be giving birth.
Years ago, I did a radio show with a number of people who'd been through the procedure. And they said that part of the problem for them was deciding working out who they were attracted to. A number who had been heterosexual throughout most of their lives.
These are all males to female?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was different with the female to the male.
Yeah.
Because
it's a whole different thing, yeah.
But they said that they found themselves attracted to women, often wound up living with women.
Yeah. Well, that seems to happen a lot. It certainly happens with Jan Morris, who stayed with his wife a lot. This is the one thing that fascinates me, too, is which marriages can survive this and which can't. I mean, I think when they do, they're living as good friends. Who knows who they're attracted to? But it's just a companionable thing that they are each other's best friends. The whole sexual thing is sort of baffling and mysterious.
And speaking to Ellen, has she told you how difficult it was for her to hide the truth, to even suppress it within herself?
Yeah, she had to. This was so. She had to practice. She had to try all the time to be masculine. She had to make a conscious effort. She was a great student. She became a student of male and female behavior, just unconsciously, because it interested her, and she had to just make sure she was acting male. And then when she decided to go through with the, and somebody criticized the word decision, it said you don't decide to become female, you already are, but you do decide or not.
You're going through a serious operation.
To go through with it. And she had all sorts of lessons in comportment, and they're all, you know, they're the specialists in this who give you tips on how to walk through a room. I mean, she says
how to sit.
12 cues, and if you blow one of them, you're red, you know, and that's a sort of tragedy.
I once was convinced to wear some kilts, and I got into a car and sat down and went, woo! Because
with a high skirt.
Because I had not pushed the skirt underneath my thighs, something that women
but
know to do
it
immediately.
It sounds like it was like a high-pitched appropriate.
Well, it was suddenly this cold seat hit the backs of my thighs. And there were all sorts of other things I had to be very aware of, to keep my knees closed.
So that's what the Scots
that I
have to
have
go
done.
Through all the time. Yeah.
Now, what was your first impression when you saw him as Ellen?
Well, the first was she wanted to control the whole process, and she wanted to just appear. You know, it was very hard because she had to go overnight from being male to being female, name and dress, everything. But she was persuaded to let us see photographs, so I got a photograph and tremulously opened it up. It was in the summer. And I thought, she looks so happy.
But did you recognize her immediately as your sister?
Well, I saw her. Well, the strange thing is she looks so much like our mother. People think she looks like me because we're tall and blonde and all that, but no, her features like mother, and that was very spooky. But she just looked so happy that I was then very relieved.
Trendspotters called 2010 the year of the transsexual. You know what they meant by that?
I don't know. There were just a lot of kind of... James Franco was on the cover of some genderqueer magazine, and there were various performers. It was just... I think it was one of the... They needed a trendoid thing, because it's actually been increasing. And I've noticed this in writing the last... Or just being an observer for the last 6 or 7 years. Every year there are more stories, good and bad. The rights, the more struggle for rights, because they lag far behind the other.
But laws have been changed.
They are.
Allowing
sort of
people to use
state
bathrooms and all sorts of things like that.
Yeah.
Is there what can be called a transsexual community?
Well, I guess there are. You know, I think the LGBT is a strange kind of umbrella, because I don't think even lesbians and gays have that much in common, and I think it's probably a useful one. At the same time, not only do they have little in common with transsexuals, but even among transsexuals, there are those who are more political than others. Others just want to be left alone, so it's a tremendous variety.
Well, transsexualism has recently been removed from the disorder category of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual.
That's a real upside downside, because we're talking about like Chelsea Manning, whether she should get hormones in prison. But once you remove it from the disease category, then you don't qualify for medical insurance. So I think they're divided about this. On the one hand, they've removed the stigma of it. On the other hand, they lose out on reimbursement.
Molly Haskell is the author of 3 books of film criticism. She's also contributed to many publications, including The New York Times, Esquire, The Nation, Vogue. Her latest book is not about film criticism. My Brother, although there have been a number of films in which men became women, Tootsie, among
others. That's right. There are a lot of them. Priscilla, Queen of the Desert it was sort of one of them. I mean, all of these almost look sort of quaint. And we've got now Twinkie Boot? No. What is the play?
Kinky Boots.
Kinky Boots. But that's such a different thing. I mean, there's something I think that's kind of reassuring, because it's sort of on the edge. It's not sort of the normal. The boy next door becomes the girl next door.
My Brother, My Sister: Story of a Transformation is published by Viking. Thank you so much, Molly Haskell, for being on our show.
Thank
again.
Thank you, Leonard. I enjoyed it.